Hello again, everybody, and welcome to the Ross Report from our palatial, albeit secret, studios somewhere in Cattle Country, Oklahoma. This is very nice of you to drop by. You picked a wonderful day because we're all above ground and can enjoy this day. So we're going to have some fun, I can promise you, because my guest is he's a fellow Hall of Famer. He's Michael Francis Foley from Long Island, New York, better known as Mick Foley. Hi, Mick. How are you?
I'm doing great, JR. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk with you on the podcast. Congratulations on all the success. It doesn't surprise me. You are, and I might be dating myself here, but you are the Edward R. Murrow of wrestling journalism.
Thank you, brother. You know, we zoomed to number one in the sports category on iTunes.
That's what, hey, well deserved.
So man, we got lucky coming out of the box. And I think it speaks to what we both love and embrace, sometimes figuratively and sometimes literally, the embrace of our fans and how loyal they are. And it's kind of cool to know that in Ireland, in the UK, and Canada, and Australia, and the USA, that our little show here from rural Oklahoma was the number one most downloaded sports podcast in the English-speaking world.
Yeah, you know, one of these days when I have enough time to really think about it, it will sink in as to how mind-blowing it is to know that the stuff we've done has affected people all over the world.
We should have been more careful. We should have been smarter and set a better example. Hey, I want to ask you this question. This is, I got a lot of questions here. I'm very going to be chatty Cathy here tonight because I think the fans like the conversation. I think they like the questions, and not all about the same thing. Hey, brother, what did you feel like mid-air when you were coming off the cell? You know, did you see your life flash before you?
You know what? It's so funny. We've had this discussion before that both of us are kind of trapped in that moment to some extent where you probably don't get it as often as I do because it was just one of many great calls you've made in your life. But I sometimes feel like I'm doomed to live that day in 1998 over and over again. And I'm also convinced that it would not have had nearly the impact if you weren't there.
Oh,
making that call. So you're to blame.
Yeah.
for every one of my days.
I have been asked this question, and I think it's a good question. Why do you maintain this seemingly relentless road schedule? Because, and it may have been me being the guilty party. I just don't recall right now. That's what happens when you're 62. But I may have said to somebody, you know, I love Mick, and I was so happy to help him live his dream in WWE just to provide the shot. He did it. But I know he's made a little money, and he's on the road like he's broke. and so why are you so relentless? And because sometimes it feels like, maybe it's because of Twitter, I don't know, that you're on the road multiple days a week, multiple weeks a month, or months,
yeah.
weeks a month. Yeah.
Well, yeah, Mark Carano, he was the head of talent relations, would always joke that I was on the road more than the guys. But you know, the idea that the words that you or I say like have this impact, not just on the people, you know, that we're, you know, lucky enough to have following us, but on the performers out there who see like a nod from us as something special, is really pretty profound deal.
I'm not so sure how comfortable I am in the big picture of that statement. That what we say actually influences people, because I'm just an old wrestling announcer and you're just an old wrestler. But at the end of the day, we're just human beings and we've loved life and we've lived it. And so sometimes we share our opinions, and if we can help people, then cool. And they like this show, that's even better. But what I'm trying to say is that neither of us have ever really gone out of our way to portray a role as it comes to how we conduct our lives.
True.
It's kind of, you know, you had good parents and so did I. And we want the next generation to have it better than ours. And sometimes I wonder about that aspect, but that's for another political show, I guess. Now, you, so you're on the road. But why the motivation to do so much?
Oh, man. Yeah. I mean, I could, in one respect, I do try to balance them out. The story I was telling about Mark Carano is where I brought him the, I wanted to compete.
Mark Carano's getting way too much publicity. First Total Divas, and now this.
Well, I wanted to compete in the International Fruitcake Eating Competition in Santa Claus, Indiana. And that it was that at that point that Mark dropped his head and he said, only you, Cactus, only you. And the nice thing about doing these shows is that I can, you know, kind of book my own interest. I can book the shows around my own interests. So if I want to do the...
And kids write it off.
Yes, I can write off a visit to Santa's Candy Castle in Santa Claus, Indiana, home of the International Santa Claus Hall of Fame, as a business expense, because then I can book, you know, I can book Louisville. I did show in Lexington.
You're laughing in the face of government.
No, I'm not laughing. Legitimate business. It's funny. I have very little in the way of wrestling memorabilia in my house, but I'm looking at the three trophies I won at the fruitcake eating competition.
Nice.
As we speak.
It's nice.
But on a more serious note, JR, you know, we make a lot of money. I saved a lot of that money. I've been fortunate enough to have been able to give to causes I believed in, but at the end of the day, you know, no one's going to take care of me in my old age, and some of the things I've done in pursuit of entertaining people and earning a living might carry with it long-term, very expensive ramifications. And,
So
I don't think there is such a thing as enough when, when an economy has collapsed a couple times and, when I've had some scary walks down in the mailbox where I, you know, open up an envelope and see that I lost more money than, at that point, and with two more children, I thought, there's a market right now for what I'm doing. It might not be there in a couple of years, and I enjoy it. I think that's primarily one of the fears that people have when they come to see me is that they'll feel bad that I'm in front of a few hundred people instead of thousands. And I think they walk away realizing that I'm enjoying myself as much on that stage, whether it's in front of 200 fans or 20,000.
I get it.
It really doesn't matter as long as you're connecting with the people that are in attendance on any given night.
I get it, my friend. I get it. It's kind of an elixir. It's one of those snake oil things that work for certain people, and you and I are in that category. It's you go out there on the stage, and I haven't done it, even a smidgen of times that you have, but I'm having fun doing my little shows. I'm just too damn lazy. I don't want to go out as much as you do. I'm picking my spots, as they say.
well, you know what? This is one of, and you warned me ahead of time about the language, so I'm going to hit you with what for me is considered rough language. But when I was when you do a loop in January and you just miss 3 feet of snow in Buffalo, and your flight to Cleveland is canceled, so you fly into Columbus and drive the extra 3 hours and show up at showtime, and then you circle around it. Erie, PA, and Rochester, New York, and go to Toronto and fly out of Buffalo.
Oh.
Like you're not going to those towns to suck. You know, like
all right.
The sole purpose is to obviously I'd like to make money, and through trials and tribulations and doing my free shows and guest appearances and being there up in front of six people on a Wednesday night unannounced, like I've gotten pretty good at what I do.
Yeah.
And so
sure
people
have.
Get a yeah, thanks, sure. People get a good show, and I really enjoy it, or else I wouldn't have been in Rochester in January or in
they need to know that you make the more tickets you sell, the better Mick does. So
yes.
There is not
it's
not like you're
entirely dependent on the crowd.
Yeah, here's the thing people gotta understand they listen to this, is that when Mick comes to your area and you want to have a lot of fun and listen and tell great stories and leave there feeling better than when you arrived, then you'll go see Mick Foley in your local area. Because, and let's all be honest about it. We're, you know, Mick and I love the fans, but I'm not going to be. I don't have a. My nose would be Pinocchio like by now if I said that. Hey, I kind of like to make them extra cash too. I'd like to help pay the grocery bill. Hey, on another note, I had this on my list. We kind of you brought it up. What do you think in the future you're going to have repaired physically?
Oh, man. You know, there's the. It's funny. One of the things I say occasionally during my shows is that, hey, despite what you may have seen on my on your TV screens, you know, I was never actually crazy when I wrestled. And I'll say I was never even reckless. And I usually get the, you know, the laughter there. And then I'll look and I go, maybe a little reckless.
Oh, yeah. Man.
But you know what, JR? I wasn't out of control. Like, a lot of the things I did specifically because I was in control of my own destination. You know, there were moves that I took as opposed to being thrown around. Like, I really insisted that people, you know, respect me when I was out there. And so the things I did, you know, they resulted in a lot of long-term, you know, it wasn't necessarily I'm one of the few guys, you know, not one of the few, but I'm lucky to have gotten away without the wrestler's neck surgery that so many of the guys have needed. But my knees are both going to need to be replaced, and that elbow that I dropped so often, which I thought would create damage on the outside part of my hip, actually created a grinding process inside the pelvic girdle.
That's very pleasant. And maybe the first time, ladies and gentlemen, anybody in the world has ever heard Mick Foley say pelvic
cradle. And that's the less disturbing way of describing it, because the actual names of the bones are the pubis and the ischium.
Ooh.
And it's the type of condition that makes even the most seasoned orthopedic guy call his colleagues in and say, I've never seen this before. Because no one specialized in a move that created that kind of grinding, chipping away process. So, for one, I accept.
Okay, so we're up to two knees and one elbow. Come on, you got to have something else.
Well, you know what? The long term that question is the brain, and I just saw an episode of Law and Order SUV that hit a little close to home about a guy who had committed a terrible crime that he was not ultimately judged guilty of because he had no idea he was committing it.
Maybe you got a ticket. You may have got a free ticket there, Mick. You may wander to the bank of Long Island and rob it and see if you can get away with it. And when they catch you, you can wet your pants and think,
well,
I don't know what
you know
I'm
what,
doing. I'm sorry. I had a chair shot.
I'm thinking of ways, JR, of approaching that really serious subject.
Somebody, I got asked this question today on Twitter, and I thought, well, it's kind of provocative, so it might be good for podcasting.
Let's hear it.
All right. Do you think you would have gotten over, as if they know what over means?
Yeah.
But would you have gotten over so much if there was a blood ban and you could not have used a steel chair?
Well, you know what? The chances of me getting over to the extent I did, even given the exact same circumstances, would have been slim. You know, like I'm convinced a valuable hand just about anywhere I went. And in the old territory days, I probably could have done that.
I didn't have that Mike Francesa moment where I fell asleep.
No, I thought
there was
a
like
another call
fan.
Came in. I don't know, understand technology. I thought I might have lost you.
No, I'm good.
I probably would have had if it was still territory based. I probably would have had some nice runs as Cactus Jack and had to been forced to change what I did very little from territory to territory. You know, with the WWE going national and keeping talent around for years instead of months.
It's hard.
Yeah, kind of forced the changes that were really, really beneficial to me. Like, the dark Mankind would probably have been dark Mankind, you know, everywhere he went from 1996 on, had there not been that, you know, international phenomenon. So I think one of the strengths I had was I had an ability to tweak the character before the public realizes
smart business
tweaking.
I tell guys that all the time, that the young kids will talk to me about the business, and I say, you've got to always evolve. If you get comfortable in your role, the comfort zone will kill you.
Oh, it will. It will. And I saw some guys kind of got swept away by the tides of change without even realizing it, because they were relying on the catchphrases for too long. I do want to answer that question about the blood and the chairs.
Yes.
I think, you know, when you exclude my comeback matches from 2004 on, which did tend to be bloody, and you look at what I did during my four main years in WWE, you'll actually see that although, the chairs, that's a fair comment, but I believe I was only involved in four or five gratuitously bloody matches. You know, it didn't mean like during the Hell in a Cell that, you know, I didn't get my teeth knocked through my lip and into my nose and that I bled from my mouth, but I wasn't involved in bloodbaths. I think I created the perception that I was, and the photos and footage from Japan created the perception that I was. So I was just fine without the blood. I really was. The chairs, there are ways. The chair of the back is really almost as effective.
Is it good that the WWE has barred chair shots to the head?
Yeah, definitely, because there was only one way to go, and that was just to progressively hit people harder and harder.
Yeah, there's nowhere to go. But if you hit them four times last week, you can't hit them four times again, or it's just the same.
When I do my show, I really tried to limit my show to one F-bomb. And if I do it correctly, I will actually get a standing ovation when I finally drop that big F-bomb. And I'll compare the use of that word for a guy on stage to the steel chair for the wrestler.
Mm-hmm.
Because when used sparingly,
right, very good point,
it can be very, very effective in creating a unique sense of realism and drama. But all too often, the F-bomb, like the chair shot, is used as a way to kind of create that easy pop. So, you know, back in the ECW days, as much as I enjoyed my ECW experience, you know, guy would go out first match, and how do I get a pop? Let me see. They're not reacting. Let me get a chair. And it really upped the ante to where, you know, when I was, I think, in my second match in ECW,
I don't think there's anything wrong with your brain. I don't think there's anything wrong with your brain. Now, I don't know if your hearing is so good, but I think your brain is fine, because if you can remember your second match at ECW.
Oh, I can. Yeah. And I got to tell you, on a serious note, getting out there and performing regularly like I do is like exercise.
I agree with that.
Best thing I could do for my brain.
I want to talk more about that. I agree with that. And I want to talk about the brain thing, because I have, I don't say I have issues, but I have concerns because I'm getting older. I've always wondered, when you got in the business back in the day, what was your plan B?
Plan B was to be on the other side of the camera. I just wrote about this a couple days ago, saying that I gave myself until I was 26 years old to start making a decent living in wrestling, and I was planning to do something on the other side, hopefully in wrestling. So even while I was part of World Class Championship Wrestling and getting my first decent push, I was spending at least one day, and often more than that, on my off days, going down to the production studio with video Bob Von Gersky.
Yep.
And
Hawaiian shirts every day.
Put together the show,
he wore Hawaiian shirts every day that smelled of cannabis. Or I might be wrong. Okay, so you were going to do some behind. You were doing some.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely I had a plan B.
I
heard you say that during the Q&A, that if someone enters the wrestling business and doesn't have a plan B, they're not doing themselves.
I don't want them.
You've got to have the plan B. So I was, I love the idea of telling stories in video. And, you know, I was fortunate enough that I was able to tell my stories in the ring and then on the page and on the stage. But I always, my plan B, to wrap it up, was to be involved in pro wrestling on the other side of the camera.
Is there anything, and I think this is a yes or no, or maybe it's not. You can embellish. Is there anything that would entice you to return to the ring for one more match?
No, I had the chance. Are you done? I am done. When a top neurologist looks you in the eye and says, you should never be in the ring anymore, you've got to take that to the bank.
Yeah, that's easy. That's an easy one. Are you in disbelief, as am I, when fans think that I'm lying when I tell them that our interview with Mankind and JR, where JR got the mandible claw, didn't have a formal written script?
Yeah, I'm really proud of that. You know, for people think the longest time, I consider that one of the finest things I ever did. And I think to this day, it was the only turn in that I started that interview as a heel, and by the time the five segments had shown, I was a babyface without ever actually turning. You know, the interview turned me. It was so well done that I guess people could expect it to have been scripted, but I think had we tried to sit down and work out questions and answers,
it would have sucked.
I think it would have been okay, but I don't think it would have.
But we had there had been writers involved and people trying to interpret our feelings or pretend they were us. I got all the respect in the world for the writing staff and how they travel and the commitment and the pressure that they're under. And they're most of them are young, so they're very plugged into social media. So they see themselves, albeit nameless, gut and quartered almost every day. So, but on that night, we had a theory that we thought would work. And yeah. I don't think anybody could write what we said. And I don't know that we could say, again, what we said then.
It just happened. It was a special place and time. And as I mentioned at your show, I didn't even know Mr. McMahon was in attendance because of the lighting, and it wasn't until we went to change tapes that I heard that voice in the darkness say, "This is outstanding." And to this day, I feel like that was the night, in Mr. McMahon's eyes, that I became a star in WWE.
And OJR made a nice hire.
Yes,
you didn't break my heart. Well, you know, I didn't see him standing in the darkness either. He kind of blends in sometimes with the aura of darkness.
You know what? On the nights where I am fortunate enough to have a second show, I'll try to change things up quite a bit just so I don't feel like I'm, you know, reciting dialogue.
Cheating?
I feel like I'm cheating if I do that. And I've started throwing in little snippets from that interview, and it's amazing the response it gets, to the point where when I
you're over, brother.
Yeah, well, that interview, you know, and I think the idea of slipping into a 1997 Mankind and really getting into that character in front of people is something
they enjoy.
I'll probably make it a point to do more of that with the new show.
You can find out, ladies and gentlemen, where you can enjoy Mick Foley at mickfoley.com. Thank you very much.
mickfoley.com.
The real Mick Foley.
Yeah. Yeah,
I still say it's an outrage. You should have it should be just Mick Foley. Please go to real Mick Foley, for God's sakes, ladies and gentlemen. He's a human being. How would you shortly describe your tenure in TNA? You have fun? Checks cashed, right?
Well-intentioned. But I think at the time, you know, at a certain point, they just had too many non-wrestling talkers. And my usefulness was done after a year. So I was thankful to have the place to work. I've said before that I should have appreciated for what it was instead of what I kept trying to think it should be. And I'm grateful that Dixie Carter had the vision and
intestinal fortitude
to create, you know, a place where people could. Could earn a living and make an impact.
Well, I try to like TNA, and I want them to succeed because the more places the guys that have the same hearts as ours, love the wrestling business, can work, the better. You know, that's why I see it. I don't, you know, it's so. But I have some philosophical issues that some of their problems could be easier fixed. But that's for another show.
Yeah.
Here's a yes or no. Here's a good one. It's not a bad question. If asked, would you join WWE Creative?
No.
Okay, I didn't think so.
Perhaps as a consultant, but I would not go on the trips and would not come in for
screaming
regular meetings.
Okay. You want to just get a recording of being screamed at, and that we can play it at your discretion.
Honestly, you know, I've written like three different ideas for people and sent them out over the last 2 years and gotten no feedback. So I'm guessing
that's
they
always
don't
encouraging.
Want my input.
No, that's always encouraging. Okay,
and now that's the soundbite everyone will hop on, I believe.
Yeah, that'll make the dirt sheets. Foley says, Foley indicts WWE for refusing his ideas.
Okay. Now, you know what? I'm going to make a prediction, JR.
Okay.
I'm going to put out a post, and it's going to. I want to send out a tweet that says, "Find out why I am irate over Jake the Snake picking DDP over me." At and I want to send them to my Facebook post.
Good.
To my Facebook, and then it's going to go. Okay, there's absolutely no reason.
We just thought
he's the perfect guy.
Exactly.
I just wanted to see how many people would come over here. And I guarantee there will be...
Yeah, do that. Please do that.
Newsletters picked up as a Foley irate over being passed over.
Yeah, please do that. That's I do like that. Did you work with anybody in your career that you enjoyed working more than with Undertaker?
Really tough to say because...
Is he in your small little handful of favorite guys you ever worked with?
Yeah, undoubtedly. And I think my favorite part, I haven't watched my speech. I think I went too long. Should have went home at Yo Adrian, I did it. But I think the unplanned parts where I talked about never once... about always appreciating what a privilege it was to be out there with him and understand that without him and the matches that we had in 1996, I wouldn't have been standing on that stage in 2013. I think that was the most, poignant part of the speech. So, without him, essentially, you and I are not having this conversation because I would not have been, I wouldn't be relevant.
I don't know. I think I'd have got over.
Maybe.
Yeah,
you would be in the same position. You'd just
maybe.
Be having a different conversation with somebody else.
I don't know. Maybe so. You know. All right.
I was really fortunate. I had all those great guys. Austin at his peak. Triple H as he was just about to hit that peak. The Rock on his rocket ride to the top. Terry Funk, where we did those terrible things to each other.
Damn you, Foley, you egg-sucking dog. That's what you are. You're an egg-sucking dog, Foley. Do you hear me? Your mother's a whore. Will that make air? No, Terry.
And he meant that in the most respectful way possible.
Of course.
But, I have to say, without Undertaker, none of the things that followed would have happened.
He's pretty important to all of us, quite frankly. Favorite Foley persona? Cactus, Mankind, or Dude Love?
I know this is not what people want to hear, but absolutely the most fun I had in wrestling was as the commissioner.
Really?
In 2000, yeah. And I honestly think it was my most, I do, I think it was my most important role because if you look back, with the exception of Mr. McMahon, there had not really been an important on-air authority figure. Jack Tunney was largely unseen. Sergeant Slaughter was rarely on. Even Shawn Michaels, who I replaced as commissioner, was rarely on the show.
Timing.
And I believe
timing.
At that time, when I stepped in, the show had been very heel heavy and a little dark, and I really think that was my most significant contribution.
That's interesting.
Yeah,
I like Dude Loves.
Wish my biggest regret is that I didn't come back and have that match with Mr. McMahon at WrestleMania 2001 for control of the company.
That would have made sense.
JR, I had this ridiculous theory that my retirement from wrestling was real, and that I didn't.
Damn it, I've retired 14 times.
I look back now and I say, what was I thinking? Not only, gave up a big, what would have been a very nice payday, but also, abandoned a job that I thought I did really well and could probably have done for the next several years.
Yeah, you could have been that. You could have been that job as long as Arnie was with Bruno. All right, Mick. Hey, thanks, buddy. I appreciate
you. Thank you, Jer. Hey, all the best. Okay.
You bet.
All right. Bye.